Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. Xstitch, and today I'm interviewing Chloe Savage. Chloe is a conservation embroiderer, couture specialist, and educator whose studio practice spans everything from National Trust restorations to hands-on needlepoint kits. In this first part of our Needle Exchange, we dive into the power of shared studio spaces, the value of peer critique, and how Chloe has built a collaborative practice that is both rigorous and restorative. My recent Needle Exchanges with Kirsty McLeod, the founder of the Red Dress Project, also emphasised the benefits of collaborative projects. And if you've not listened to those yet, you're missing a treat. Find that chat at episodes 112 and 113. I'll be back next week with the second half of my conversation with Chloe. And if you enjoy this show, be sure to subscribe on your podcasting platform so you don't miss out. I'll see you next week. Enjoy the show.
Greyhound Labrador mix, and he was like 40 kilos, 65 kilos. What is he?
Pyrenees Mountain Dog.
In the studio.
Yeah, she likes to sit right behind your chair.
Can you use her as a sofa? Does it work like that?
Could use her as a great throw rug.
Yeah, or for pulling a plough, perhaps. So you've got... I was going to tell you a story about how in 2003... I decided to try cross stitch, and then like the reason I'm late today, right? So the reason I'm late today is that I set up a community interest company. We've taken out a 10-year lease on this building that used to be a Burton's and a Dorothy Perkins, and it's opened up this massive can of project management. So today I was like having a conversation with some electricians, and we removed some hoarding that had been out of the shop since like 2021 or whatever. And just how, you know how things escalate? You know, do you ever think like things get a bit out of control? And then I was thinking, well, you've got a studio. And in some ways, like, I'm fascinated by that because I know people think I've got a studio, and people look at my office here and they think, oh, he's got a very lovely working environment. And I'm like, you see 1% of my working environment and the rest of it does not look like this. But I was interested in what it's like to have a studio, how it is to work with other people kind of deliberately, because I feel like you've set this up intentionally. Is that right?
I sort of inherited the porter cabin. It is down the garden.
Right.
Our garden is a little bit bigger than most. It's 2.2 acres.
Yes, that's bigger.
The original plan, we bought the house planning to build, and we've now got planning permission. So I'm actually about to build my custom studio.
Okay, that sounds cool.
Which is even more fun.
Okay.
But no, Katrina came to a class and stayed. It's pretty hard to say that. No, I've worked alone for a while, and I reached a point where the workload of what we had to do with running the company, the embroidery kits, the subscription box, and the conservation got too much for one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought I was starting to look for somebody to come in, but trying to find somebody with our skill set,
yeah,
isn't the easiest. And Katrina came to a class.
And the rest was history.
She would soon discover she's very overqualified. And it was like, actually, I don't need to teach half of it. So she's doing what I call the couture side of the training.
Right.
That I have.
Mm-hmm.
She already trained in design. She already understands principles of design. I don't have to teach this.
Yeah. That's pretty. Do you feel like it was a bit fated?
I think we agree it was. It was just like, bingo. And we do bounce off each other well, but it's also why I like being at Emerge in Bath,
mm-hmm.
at my studio space there, because I can bounce off ceramicists, graphic designers, printers.
Mm. So talk about that a bit, because that's a bigger studio experience, right?
Yes. Emerge is designed for graduates of Bath Spa Loxbrook Campus Art School.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based at Sion Hill.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
basically go to the big bath circle that everyone knows, and it's behind it.
Okay, right.
So we've got great views, huge campus, gorgeous Georgian building, slightly dodgy plumbing. But there are up to about 30 of us and associate residents, who are people who've been at Emerge and have now left, but they can still come and hop desk.
Kind of alumni, I guess.
Yeah.
Alumni.
Mm. And you're offered either a single space or a shared space for up to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to qualify. And you then get to work on projects that are offered within Bath Spa, but also on projects that are further afield. So we've got things like Up Lake at the Holborn, which is where we take over the Holborn Museum gallery space overnight and run a short exhibition.
Right.
And we actually hang our work within the museum.
Oh, amazing.
So, which is great fun.
Mm.
There's other things that we've done. Sarn Hill also has its own gallery space, so we can, for virtually nothing, run our own shows.
This is a pretty remarkable deal you've got there, isn't it?
Yeah. And we can then also use the space at Loxbrook, where there's another gallery, but we can also use the facilities, the laser printers, the laser cutters, the print studios. So we can continue to experiment with our practice, but without having the financial implications.
Yeah.
Of having to be in.
How long has that initiative been going?
It started COVID when a group of people lost their artist studios.
Right.
And they were like, okay, well, Sarn Hill is more or less empty now.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way we can use it and support the Loxbrook students?
Mm.
And we have creative mentors as well who come in.
So there was an existing community, I guess, before that. And then this is just like a, I was going to say like a lightning rod. This is just a hub for that, a space where a lot of the activity happens. Are you the only embroiderer in there?
No, there is another girl who is more mixed media, but she does do cross stitch.
Big up that. Well, who's she called?
I can't remember. I've got her name down. I know what her name is, but I don't know what her Instagram handle is. But I will let you know. Katie.
Okay. Shout out to Katie. Anybody who does cross stitch. I like the way you said cross stitch there.
But no, I'm really the only embroiderer. But we do have an embroidery studio at Loxbrook.
Okay. Interesting.
Which does machine work, and they have digital machines and other things. So it is taught.
Right. Okay. So who are your like neighbours in that space, and what other media are you sat next to?
So I've got two oil painters who share the cubicle next to me. And then I've got a ceramicist who is sharing my other wall.
Right.
And then over the little corridor space, I have got she's a graphic designer. She did her master's in design, but she does a lot of print work around nature.
Right.
Project from Micronauts, which is sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the bottom of the corridor is my partner in crime, Dan, who did a fine art MA, but is also a chemist who works on oil rigs.
Naturally.
Yeah. Midlife crisis got extreme.
Yeah.
And he does lots of mixed media work on men's mental health.
Okay. And so how does it work? Like, are these people who you just kind of chat with, or do you find that you are like cross-pollinating like skills and stuff?
We run shows with each other. We run a pop-up shop with each other.
Mm.
We share skills. So I've just taught a gold work class and I'm teaching a black work class, which is mostly students within Emerge.
Right.
We also are required to do skill shares on business skills. So because I've been doing it for a lot longer, I run a Pinterest course and I'll run an email marketing course. So we share skills within the group so that we support each other.
That's cool.
Sometimes you just pop across the corridor because you need, can you just look at this and tell me I've lost the plot?
Yeah, but that's perfect, isn't it? That's what you want. You just want people who, you just want peers, right? And it's quite hard to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And being an artist can be incredibly lonely.
Mm.
Once you leave university, you sort of end up in a studio at home, and then you don't get that interaction.
Yeah, and then also you've chosen a medium that there are no shortcuts. It's not like, and I'm not dissing any other mediums, but digital stuff, you can sort of do a bit, you know, technology evolves and makes life easier, but we've yet to have that fine hand embroidery robot AI combo.
I'm not sure it's ever going to happen.
No, I don't think it ever will. I think that's...
I don't think I'm ever going to be put out of work.
Yeah, but it's always funny talking to like the RSN graduates about the sheer number of hours, because I don't think anybody who hasn't done it, like I've not done it, but I know how long it takes to do cross stitches and stuff. Like you can't fathom that time. So not only is it insular, but it's insular for a very long time, right?
Yeah. And I would say that the perk of that is having ADHD, because I can then tunnel for 6 hours, 6 or 10 hours straight,
mm-hmm.
which is not necessarily healthy.
As long as you've got an alarm to remind you to get up and stretch once every 2 hours or something, I would have thought.
That's what other Emerge residents will remind me to do.
just turn the lights off so that you realise that it's time to go home or something.
They sort of stick their heads around the corner going, have you actually moved today?
Do you do stretching and stuff? Because, I mean, it can be quite, like, posturally bad, right?
We even have a Emerge girl who comes up and teaches yoga and reminds us to come and move.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So just doing that kind of communal thing, make it a bit more palatable working, I was going to say at home, but working with Katerina, like in your little studio.
Yeah, we do remind each other that we need to move, that we need to function. But it's also quite nice in the sense that we can bounce project ideas off each other.
Mm-hmm.
And go, no, it's not reading what you think it's saying.
Mm.
Because you spend so time staring at your work that sometimes it starts reading something else and you've not even noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it takes somebody to go in and go, I'm not sure that's doing what you said it is.
Mm. Yeah. Because you can't see it, can you? Because you just get too into it and you think it's the most amazing idea you've ever had. And then someone reminds you that you've just copied it from a billboard that you walked past without realizing or something.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need somebody else to sort of remind you or go, it's just not working. Maybe you need to change the colour.
Mm. But I'm really fascinated in that project because, like, we're trying to do something similar in a way in Crewe. Crewe doesn't have, we've got a college, we've got a design college, but there's never been that kind of communal studio space. And the town itself has never been afforded like an art gallery or anything. So there's not really much of that ongoing community.
I can tell you now, you would be so welcome to come down to Emerge. Charlotte and Joe would be very happy to talk you through what they do.
Yeah, I think a bit of a fact-finding mission there definitely is worth a look, because it's just, but you just know, don't you, people just like communing. The opportunity to be in like-minded space and talk about creativity is such a healthy thing for people. I can still remember profoundly back in the days when I was just young Master X-Stitch going to this thing called Sampler Culture Clash. And it was the first time I'd ever been to a...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Stitching thing with other people. And we all just sat at a table doing some stitching. And because of the way that makes you feel internally, suddenly you had this kinship on a level that you couldn't necessarily explain.
Yeah.
It's a lovely thing, isn't it?
I'm a bit spoilt because I've got artists in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, no one has ever turned around and said, well, that's the stupid career choice, because we've got equally stupid career choices.
Yeah, that must be quite freeing. Then all bets are off. We'll talk about how come you ended up being a science teacher then. It's just like that was that thing with the guy with the oil rig and the fine art as well.
Yeah, but sometimes life is just throws a curveball and you make a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it works. And I would definitely say the community has helped. And I went to do my master's in Bath just after the loss of my mum, and I'd lost my way.
Right.
And I needed some guidance to find it my way back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think getting back into a space with completely different people who work in different mediums and an international community, because we had girls from China, America, lovely Mexican lad. And do you know what I mean? It was again sort of pushing my boundaries and going, well, actually, no, I'm not mad. This is possible.
Mm. Yeah.
And having those adult art conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's quite a nebulous thing, isn't it? And that's what I mean. It's like I I've got a friend who produces a magazine and also has a podcast. And as someone who has produced a magazine and also has a podcast, I love it when we chat because you can get into the weeds and you don't get that combination very often of that kind of thing, don't you? Where someone's on the same level as you. The rest of the time you stare, well, you watch people glass over a little bit, don't you? When you're like,
I think artists also have a certain mentality. And I certainly assume that a slightly dodgy sense of humour involved with a lot of us.
That does help. That does help.
And we also have a slightly suicidal streak where we think, well, this was a really good idea.
So, yeah, probably. I don't want to unpick my psyche too hard right now. What is the portfolio of products then that are within the Chloe Savage ecosystem?
So originally we were starting with... did my training and I landed some work with the National Trust. So I started doing some conservation work,
mm-hmm.
partly because there's only one course in the whole of the UK now that trains for conservation in Glasgow.
Okay.
And there's an actual shortage.
Yeah, right.
So conservators. I mean, if you think about every old house, museum, palace, that's a lot of textile.
Scap in the market there, folks. Pay attention.
Scap in the market. And if you can really sew well, bingo.
Mm.
So also the church work, there's a huge market for this.
Yeah.
So I landed some work with them and I started collecting people who'd be sent to me going, well, I've got this sample of grandma's or I've got this chair that my great aunt did. And we started building that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID hit.
Right.
Which was a joy. And as most of you all know, the world tilted and a lot of commissions were put on hold and we started making kits,
right,
which we still have. So we have needlepoint kits.
Mm-hmm.
We have some basic embroidery skill kits and we also have a collection of children's kits.
Right.
Being an ex-teacher, I find that what we don't teach in school is skills.
Mm.
A lot of design theory, not a lot of how to do it.
Mm.
And that's a problem. Because they've all got these bright ideas, but they've got no idea how to materialise them.
Yeah.
And then they get switched off because they go, oh, can't do that.
Mm.
And that's not good. So we started looking at children's skills, which we still teach quite a bit of.
And so what kind of stuff are you talking about there? Because presumably it's...
We start with things like basic cross-stitch and Aida, just learning the hand-eye coordination, doing something that isn't screen time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always good. As a parent, you'll understand the battle.
Yeah.
Needlepoint, I find, is another great one for young people because you can get into a rhythm.
Yeah, the meditative. I think that's the thing I've always loved about it, just the meditation and the effect that it has that, again, you can't really put your finger on it until it happens.
Yeah. And for a lot of children, it's sometimes just another form of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not be drawers, but they can stitch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's allowing them to go, well, you can be creative, but you don't have to be good at art necessarily.
Mm. Yeah. And I sometimes think that because of things like needlepoint and cross stitch and the certain prescription that there is, that it's not hard to follow to achieve a certain outcome. That's quite a safe space, isn't it? Sometimes when you're drawing, like I even see with my own daughters, the difference between what they want to draw and what they can draw and the frustration layer that comes from that, whereas something like needlepoint, it's just like, it's that pattern, and that's, you're going to get the result that's staring you in the face.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just, or just colour, just put colour down in any format, and you get something unique.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a really healthy OCD, I accept this.
Yeah, no.
Is life perfect? Is anything in life really perfect? No. Sometimes the imperfections are the fun.
Yeah, I think I have that conversation. We've got some volunteers that help out at the art space. And there's a young man called Francis. And just, I got him to do this sign right that had our opening hours on it. And it took him about 4 weeks. And I was like, I wrote another one in about 10 minutes. I was like, honestly, Frank, good enough. I was like, you understand the concept of good enough, please.
But it's also with embroidery, they can learn to fail. And it's just unpickable. It's completely fixable. There is nothing wrong with it going wrong. We can just take it out.
Mm.
And I think a lot of children are terrified to fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All this, you mustn't fail. You mustn't get it wrong. And you're like, well, actually, no. Sometimes part of life is learning to fail and what to do afterwards.
I mean, that's kind of the whole of life, isn't it? Just how you balance. The more you fail, the better you become, I guess.
Well, sometimes failure is the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
You land on something because you made a mistake.
So that's like the product portfolio. That's the stuff that keeps the lights on.
Yeah.
And then somewhere in that as well, you're an award-winning embroidery artist.
Well, then we have our subscription box, which is...
Go on. Carry on. I want the layers. It's useful.
Well, having lived through COVID, having all my eggs in one basket is a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Because, again, I can't justify that that's not going to happen again or something else is going to go wrong and we need to be balanced across the board. I can't balance just on commissions or I can't balance just on gallery shows. I have to have a more even base for safety reasons. I'm not repeating that again. It wasn't good for my health. And, no, I caught COVID. It was not good for my health.
Oh, what, when it was properly trendy?
Yes, when it was properly nasty.
Yeah.
Several weeks in hospital, blood clots in the lungs. I'm not going back there again. It was not fun.
Just an aside, right? The other day I was talking to a friend of mine and he was like, yeah, half of my family have got COVID. And I'm just like, and you're just standing here talking, like, isn't it still, you feel like we've just forgotten. Like we've forgotten what a big bloody deal it was.
I think it depends on whether you were the ones who just caught it and it felt like flu or the ones that got hospitalised and had more tubes in you than a Terminator movie.
Jeez Louise.
And it was like, yeah, no.
Mm.
It was not pleasant. So we have the subscription box. We have projects that go out every 2 months.
Okay.
But we made some clear decisions. We wanted them to be usable items.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you know, as an embroiderer, you end up with a lot of hoop art you don't know what to do with.
Yeah, it's just whimsy, isn't it? Whimsy's fine for a while.
Yeah. And then you have to start thinking, well, I might need something that I can actually gift as a project.
Mm.
So I make it and I gift it, or it's something that's usable in everyday life.
That's my Lego strategy. The only way I can get Lego in the house is if it's practical, which is quite a challenge. I do all right. I've got a calendar that was made out of Lego. That was quite useful. But
There's ways to sneak it in. We have crates. I'm sure he doesn't, that no one's noticed that there's now three crates, not two.
Nice. But yeah, so what kind of things that are useful then? What are the kind of things that...
So we've done makeup bags, needlepoint coin purses, camera bag straps, things that you could use, a bit of brooches, bit of jewellery in other forms, even just things like where to put your embroidery scissors.
And
things that you'll use.
And things that you'll finish before the next subscription box.
Yeah.
Because it feels like that sometimes, I've not done a subscription box, but I feel like there's a thing there where like a monthly subscription box doesn't give people enough time to complete any of the things. And so you just get this real backlog, right?
We found every two works better.
Mm-hmm.
But we do give people the option to pause and catch up.
Mm. Yeah. How many subscribers have you got? You don't have to tell me, but I'm curious.
Several hundred.
Yeah, cool. So it's a good little number. Yeah.
It does its job.
Mm, yeah. And do you have like an associated Facebook page and the sort of community aspect of it?
Yes.
Because again, that's a secret sauce, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. It takes a lot of work,
hence
why there's now two of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even then we're like, we might need a third.
But do that? I mean, do they look out for each other? Have you got like your key people in your community who like, yeah.
Yeah. And we started running a free Stitch and Bitch session in our local community just to bring people together.
Nice.
Which works quite well.
How far ahead do you plan your subscription boxes?
We've got a year's worth on the board.
Right.
They might move around slightly just due to what's going else is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's quicker to design.
And can people then buy old subscription kits, or is it like once it's...
Yeah, at the end of a year, we get rid of any excess.
Yeah, because I had this thing with my magazine, right? So with X-Stitch, the magazine, it went for 30 issues until I kind of ran out of steam. And I was using Readly, like this magazine subscription service, and I wanted to just like recycle them and just put them back on again for another loop of 30, but they didn't seem to want to do that. It seems very castaway, and it's kind of weird because you think that it's leave for, you know, a subscription in some ways could start at the beginning for any new person, isn't it? It doesn't always have. I know when you've got a community, you want everyone to have that communal experience, but there's no reason really why you can't, like, I can start a subscription now and people can just buy issue one and roll through it.
There is no reason that can't work as a theme that you start everyone with box one.
Yeah, yeah.
And work through. Mm. We found it's easy just to recycle and just sell any excess off at the end of a...
Yeah, I guess I'm blasé because I'm just like, they're digital PDFs made of fluff, whereas yours are physical boxes made of stuff.
Yeah, but we, if we time it right, we only end up with 3 or 4 extra a month.
Right.
So they're relatively easy to get rid of.
Mm.
Or we offer them as a bonus prize for something.
Yeah. And do you have those sessions where you just sit there making up cardboard boxes for a day and all of that sort of stuff, making all the kits up?
We cheat. Our boxes come pre-made. I reached a point where that was not happening.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, like paper cuts, but cardboard box cuts are right buggers. Like, I've cut my hand something chronic on cardboard boxes before.
No, we cheated. We actually make our boxes delivered made up.
Yes, that's very smart.
I know it's a bit more of a git to store, but in practical terms, I'd rather store them, deal with the storage problem, than the building problem.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I think that's why I never got into kits. I just didn't want to spend my evenings like measuring out threads and cutting them. Have you got any good gizmos for that sort of thing?
We've worked out that 2 barrel clamps could be set at a meter. We could really get through threads at quite a rate. There are some devious ways around some of it. Yeah. It's also amazing what your teenagers will do for cash.
Okay, yeah, that's reasonable. That's worth having. Yeah, that makes sense.
Teenagers work for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, so this is a subscription box, conservation work, kits. Any others?
Yeah, and then there's the artwork.
Right, let's talk about the artwork.
So I started doing the artwork many years ago and was told by some people like Karen Nicol that I really ought to take this more seriously. And then had another kid. Then went and had another child.
Mm-hmm, brilliant.
Yeah, that's a real career damager.
Yeah.
And then got tied up with having sort of the funding and managing the multiple children.
Mm-hmm.
And their lives. And then last couple of years, I was like, okay, I need to start taking the art more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having conversations with my mum going, she was like, no, you need to go and do some proper art and get back into the swing of it. And we were discussing how I could do that. And then she became very sick and passed away very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, this hole was left.
Yeah, like she's supposed to be still telling you what to be doing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, my mum was Royal College of Art fashion trained.
Right.
I was used to having somebody who could tell me.
Yeah.
And talk art with me, or we used to go to shows together. So we did a lot like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally went and signed up to my master's in a moment of, oh, hell, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a bit of a shell shock.
Yeah, but otherwise you might stop. Do you know what I mean? You could have just gone, I don't know how to carry on anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just was like, well, no, why not? And I now know how to produce a kit. I can design and produce a kit without really thinking about it anymore.
Mm.
I know what things cost. I know how to upscale it to 200. It's sort of become a habit.
Yeah.
But I'd lost the artistic drive to design.
Mm-hmm.
So I signed up to Bath Spa to their MA in design in textiles. And it gave me a massive kickstart.
Right.
Because it made me rethink what I wanted to say. Because designing for a kit is it selling? Is it in the niche? Mm. It's very different to an artwork piece.
Yeah.
Which you can go, well, does it need to say anything cutesy? It doesn't have to be mass market.
Mm.
It's a very different design process.
Just before we go, so... I remember listening to a lecture by a guy called Paul Greenhalgh, who was to do with East Anglia University. And I'm going to butcher his title, so I'm not even going to try now. But talking about the old art versus craft versus design debate, and something about art being a one-to-one conversation and design being a one-to-many conversation. So you produce a thing and you, with the design element, everybody has the same experience because that's the way you've applied it. How does that concept sit with you?
It's pretty correct in the sense that when you design a kit, you've got to take in multiple possible customers.
Yeah.
And design something that works for most of them.
Mm.
Whereas a piece of art, it's me saying something to an audience, but I want them all to receive the same meaning.
Yeah.
Which is where we came out, or I want to highlight something to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than trying to make them all feel happy about it. It doesn't have. It also doesn't have to make you feel happy.
Yeah.
It can make you feel sad. It can make you feel uncomfortable. It can make you go, ooh, I don't like it. Whereas a kit has only one end goal, which is to make you feel happy about it.
So that someone buys it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Art doesn't have to have that conversation.
Mm.
It can make you, as long as it makes you feel something.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's, ooh, I don't like it, it's had an effect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's it, isn't it? The worst kind of art's the one that doesn't make you feel anything. Or, like, I feel like that with architecture sometimes. You know, like, buildings that just don't give you anything. And you're like, why? What's even the point?
Yeah. Then it's failed. It's bad design when you fail to feel anything.
Mm. Yeah.
Or you sit there going, well, why did they do that? If it doesn't have an effect on you, it's failed.
Yeah. So then... let me just think. What I'm going to do is we're going to go way back in time for a minute, and then we're going to ping back up to get to that point, because I'm interested in where you go as an artist when you decide to re-engage the artistic process. But let's go all the way back, because as you said, your mum was very, like, RCA, Royal
yep.
Academy.
Royal College, yeah.
Royal College, yeah. And was your dad arty as well?
No, well, he can do a really mean watercolour mind map.
Okay, right, okay.
He designed mines.
Okay.
I mean, not just teeny weeny ones. We're talking massive open pit mines. I spent my childhood in some very bizarre places. Well, Dad designed very big holes.
Right. Like all over the world?
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Well, I was born in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Is that diamond mines?
Diamond mine. Then we went into Namibia, which was uranium.
Okay.
Then to Spain, which was copper. Then to France, which was talcum powder.
God.
Yes, there's a talc mine in France.
That's amazing.
Then out to Australia, which was copper again. Then back to Africa, which was phosphate. Then I navigate by very big holes. Then Hong Kong, which wasn't actually a... no, it was Borneo first, which was a copper mine. And then Hong Kong, where he did the earth moving for Hong Kong Airport.
Oh, God.
He's the idiot who blew up half an island. Don't ever let my father near explosives. Yeah. And we finished in India.
That's amazing.
So my childhood spent a lot of time in some particularly bizarre places. So though I've got a British passport, I spent most of my childhood not in this country.
Are you really good at digging holes just because it's in your DNA?
I have an unfortunately bizarre knowledge of slope stability. Slope stability. I have sat through so many mining conversations about, and I can identify rocks at a glance, but that's just what happens when you hang out with a bunch of mining engineers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's bonkers. That's such a weird trip, isn't it? To go like diamonds to uranium to copper to talcum powder. Yeah.
But the basic mine structures are all the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right. So very creative problem solving. Let's put it that way for sure. Right. And then like, because... so you studied at Ecole Lesage in Paris at some point.
So I finished my GCSEs and my A-levels like most normal teenagers. And I found myself expecting child number one.
Okay, right.
And I then had to realise that I had to be a grown-up.
That sucks, doesn't it?
It sucks. And there aren't many jobs that are practical when you have very young children. So my parents weren't like, well, you've got science A-level. Why don't you go and do a science degree and then train as a teacher? Because at least then you're around in the holidays. You've got that flexibility.
Mm, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So I went and did the adult job.
Right.
I wouldn't say I was the most ecstatic about it. I love teaching. I discover I like engaging with people.
Mm.
I'm not necessarily... a drastic keen scientist.
No, but you, this might sound wrong, you're a very charismatic nerd.
Oh God, yeah. I like a good, but then most of our household, my father's a charismatic nerd. My mother was too. My grandparents were.
That's what you want from a science teacher though, don't you? You want someone who's got the genuine enthusiasm for a subject that's so abstract at times that you need that in a teacher just in general, don't you?
Yeah. And I do enjoy a good spreadsheet, which is just a little.
Have you seen? Have you ever seen like the competitive Excel spreadsheet things? It's like an e-sports.
Yeah. Well, my current partner designed spreadsheets that track and monitor the stock market. If you want real nerd spreadsheets.
Okay. Right. Is he got like 19 million Bitcoin? Well, he wouldn't have 19 million. But...
he works for one of the world's largest hedge funds.
Okay. Good choice there. Damn. He lives in the Cayman Islands. That's why he's moving to, where did you say he's moving to? Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
Yeah, okay.
But he's got nerd to a whole new.
Yeah, they are in here.
We can bond over spreadsheets, which is just a little bit weird.
That eSport, I watched it once and it was strangely compulsive because it is kind of like they have to just make the spreadsheets do certain things to unlock certain information that moves them on or whatever. And I was like, this is really compulsive.
It is really quite. I will accept I am a. I mean, considering I was in my teens, I taught myself Klingon.
Okay. Yeah. That's strong nerd game there. That's fine. I was always. So I was into more like comic books and stuff. And so I always thought I was a geek. And then I read a thing that said, if you're concerned whether you're a geek or a nerd, that means you're a nerd. And I was like, God damn it. That's not fair.
I don't think I ever cared.
No, you see, that's nonchalant, that is. I'm pretty sure, I think Flora's a nerd. She's going to be a nerd.
Oh, I have three very healthy nerd children.
Of course, their nerd game is going to be very strong, let's face it. So.
Yeah, their nerd genes are in very, very unique subjects.
So you did the science teaching for a while. When did the desire to then get back into needlework, or like, how did that reemerge?
Even when I was at school teaching, I used to have to run after-school clubs, and I started teaching needlework as an after-school club.
Okay.
And got rapidly, horrendously oversubscribed.
Hmm.
Because textiles is taught, but it's almost all design prairie, and you get told to get the glue gun out, which the kids actually want to know how to actually sew.
Yeah.
So they used to come. So I said I'd take 10 and ended up with 25. And then they said, but miss, can we come in at lunchtime? So I ended up with an after-school club and my lunch classroom being taken over at lunchtime. And was like, okay, maybe I need to rethink this. And then, weirdly, I was offered redundancy just as my partner was moving to Jersey.
Right, okay.
And Jersey is a bit interesting in that you can only work if you have the right category license to be there. So I could go there and be banker's wife.
Yeah.
But I couldn't work. And I'm really not good at sitting around the house and arranging flowers and getting my nails done 3 times a week.
Mm.
And it's just like, okay. And so then I decided that I'd continue my needlework journey. And so I went to Royal School of Needlework, Hampton Court.
Mm-hmm.
I fly in from Jersey. I have got the crew for at that time, one of the longest commutes.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I fly from Jersey, do my class and fly back.
I bet the other students looked at it like, what is Chloe all about flying in all the time? They're sitting in a...
They thought I was a little bit mad. Or I'd fly in and use the Bristol satellite because then I could check on my parents and then fly back again. I know.
How long ago was that?
That was 2010.
Okay.
But I will accept that I probably could sew pretty well, purely because when you grow up with a Royal College of Art fashion graduate who makes stuff for the Royal Ballet and stuff like this when you were a child. I could work a sewing machine better than most. I have sort of accepted I've got skills I gained by osmosis.
I mean, was your mum proactive in that respect?
When I was in my childhood, when we still lived in London, or based out of London, yes, she made for Helen Hamlin, Jay Jagger, Royal Ballet.
Right.
Yeah, Bernard Neville would come to tea. It was very weird. I've realised how weird my childhood really was in later life.
Yeah.
I thought it was normal.
Yeah, of course.
You don't expect the Royal Ballet to traipse through your dining room, but I thought this was normal until you go to school.
Doesn't everybody have a ballet traipsing through there?
So I sort of have always done that, and I've got an uncle who is a painter and used to look after the Southampton Art Collection for the museum, and...
Mm-hmm.
So art has always been in the family. My grandmother was a concert pianist. We are autistic. We accept this. Or scientists. We've only got two options, really.
Yeah. Or sometimes both.
Yeah. Or sometimes the few of us in the middle who just insist on being an overachiever.
Yeah, right. Have you got any siblings?
I have a brother.
Is he older or younger?
He's my little brother.
Okay, so you're the alpha. Okay.
And he specializes in law.
Okay, just had to, couldn't step out of, just step completely out of the lanes.
Oh, no, he's a complete nerd in his field.
Is he? Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
He's got no choice.
And I don't try and understand it. And I've got a cousin who's a neuroscientist and one who's a geneticist.
Okay.
Yeah, we like to overachieve.
Is that, do you just talk about like Game of Thrones instead? Because you're like, well, at least we all know what we're on about at this point.
Yeah, and we're not allowed to play Scrabble anymore.
It's too hard.
It involves multiple dictionaries and, yeah.
Yeah, you end up doing it in like you say, Klingon or something.
Yeah, it turns into a blood sport. We're not allowed to do Scrabble anymore. It's a banned game in the family.
So the embroidery skills, so the ones when you were teaching it, the after school club, had you done any particular embroidery training at that point?
I'd been out to spend a bit of time with Kelly Aldridge and done a few day classes with Kelly.
Right.
But I just sort of self-taught.
Okay. So then the RSN grounds you in the skill set. And that's, I mean, 2010, was that the degree? That was early days of the degree, right?
It wasn't even the degree
was
yet.
Was it not? Was it still the apprenticeship?
And they didn't have the certificate. They only had the sort of certain dip, but it was still working its way into proper training rather than, it sort of, the apprenticeship had stopped.
Right.
And they got the sort of certificate diploma, which was the apprenticeship, but it hadn't really sorted itself out yet.
Yeah.
And they certainly hadn't started Future and Tutor or the degree yet.
Right. Okay.
So it's that gap. Well, it's trying to work itself out.
Mm. But still, I suppose coming out of the back of that and heading into the conservation thing was a logical conclusion at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I sort of remember talking to the RSN students, like pre-4K telly and pre Game of Thrones and all that, and just being like, well, good luck getting a job sort of thing. It was that kind of time, wasn't it?
Well, I also, because we were based in Jersey, Paris was an equally equidistant hop.
Okay.
In the other direction.
Mm.
If you think about Jersey, it's quite a sensible hop to each option. And because we live in Jersey, we speak French. My husband is French.
Oh, très bien. That's all the French I'm saying.
So Paris wasn't exactly a different hop for me. So I went out to the Ecole Lesage and did their training, which is Chanel.
Right, okay. And how is that?
It's different. It's more couture based.
Mm. And let's dig into that. Imagine, because the RSN, they teach you a lot of the fundamentals, isn't it? The fundamental techniques. But in some ways, I feel like a lot of it is that sort of, I always talk about like papal embroidery. It's that direction, isn't it? It's the fancy, it's the royal stuff. So what's the difference then between that and the more couture direction?
Apart from the fact you have to do the hook de l'enville, which is the tambour,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of where you work
underneath.
So the design is on the front, but you're working from the back, but you have to work backwards. It's quite an interesting thing to learn, working backwards.
Mm.
It's also often done on chiffons or very sheer fabrics,
mm.
because it's then over a garment or appliqué on secondary.
And does that mean you just really got to take your time?
You develop, again, it's developing the hand skills and the rhythm and learning to sort of teach yourself a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
But also they have a tendency to use feathers, straw, materials that you wouldn't necessarily find at the RSN.
Mm.
They're very much the traditional silk, wool, cotton.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of bead if you're lucky, but you rarely get into straws, feathers, sequins.
Yeah, I was talking with Hanny Newton the other day, who's on a journey with straw.
I know Hanny.
Twisted my mind. No, it didn't twist my mind. It blew my mind when she started talking about she's sowing seeds of the world's oldest grain so that she can practice doing needlework with it. I was just like, I need to stop and think about this. That's like madness.
We can end up down some really good holes.
Yeah. Yeah, and talking holes with very sensibly designed slopes as well, I should.
Yeah, I'm working with the Emerge Studios, weirdly with a dyer,
right.
who is working entirely in natural dyes, but she's dyeing wools for us.
Right.
So we're going down some quite spectacular rabbit holes with, can we get hold of this really odd type of plant to see what the colour actually looks like?
Yeah.
Referenced here in this sort of 13th century book.
Are you talking with Susan about that sort of stuff? Because, I mean, she's the OG in terms of colours and dyes and things, isn't she, really?
Yeah, we're playing with a lot of us, and it's just trying to track some of the plants down.
Yeah.
What they are now called.
Yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because it's a bit like heritage seeds and those sorts of things that people have realized we need to hold on to these heritage seeds. The stuff you're talking about is like, we could lose it quite easily if we don't pay attention, couldn't we? Because it's just artificialized out of existence or whatever.
Well, I work with the Heritage Craft Association as well in trying to hold on to skills.
Yeah, awesome.
And expose, again, teenagers who aren't necessarily academic into possible careers that are slightly more left field and might suit them better.
Coracle making. I always like to give coracle. Coracles are bonkers, aren't they? Coracles and the spice trade and all of those sorts of things. You're just like, whoa.
If we lose the skills, we lose so much about us.
Yeah, yeah, we really do, don't we? They're just these layers of humanity that we don't really understand. But like coracles in particular enabled us to get across vast tracts of water when we couldn't build big enough boats and stuff, isn't it? It's like crazy stories, crazy. Okay. So then you graduate from there. You do. So did you, with the couture stuff then, is that something that you then went into as well? Or was it
I was working for some of the fashion houses at the same time.
Right. And when you're doing that, are you making samples that then get made in other places for cheap?
Sometimes, yes. Or sometimes it's the gown for the fashion show, the fashion week, because they can control it more if it's manufactured under their noses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not so practical to send it out to India to make it because they can't then monitor what's going on. Or if the colour is slightly wrong, they can't suddenly change it.
Yeah.
Which they do.
Yeah, that sounds like quite a high pressure environment.
It is. It's hard work. Fashion Week, don't plan on getting much sleep the couple of weeks before. You are literally adjusting things and tweaking things and sewing things on at the last minute because somebody's had a bright idea.
Yeah, and how do you self-care in those situations? Like, how do you survive that?
It's difficult. It's learning not to take things personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not you. The designer is shouting at everybody.
Yeah.
It's not personal. If they're the ones with their names on the line.
Yeah.
If it isn't right.
Mm.
You learn to limit your caffeine intake. Otherwise, you start twitching.
Yeah, which is unhelpful.
It's just sensible, but also make sure that you, when you do get to the end of it, you take a proper break and go, okay, I need 3 weeks off. Mm. There is no conversation about this. For hand and wrist care, because that's what suffers most, it's things like getting wax, hot wax manicures and things, which take sort of the pressure off the muscles and the joints.
Okay, that's a pro tip, isn't it? Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. But yeah, you're quite right. You've got to look after those muscles because they're going to make...
These are my most valuable asset.
Yeah. Would you find some... Like, would the designers have a good understanding of the mechanics of what they're asking you to do? Or would they sometimes just draw a picture and go, like, just make that happen and then leave you to fathom it?
It depends on the designer. Some have more experience than others.
Mm-hmm.
If they've been in it for a much more length of time, they understand some of the materials, how they behave.
Mm-hmm.
So they go, well, we can't mix that with that because we know it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Younger designers have a tendency to go, make that work. And you're like, I have God knows idea how that's going to work.
Yeah.
From experience, those materials do not sit well with each other.
Mm.
And occasionally you have to go, yeah, it's just not. We're going to have to do something with this.
But would those be the kind of designers who wouldn't necessarily bed embroidery into all their work? Maybe it'd be like a whimsical thing rather than a more experienced needlework, like more experience, more familiarity, more conscientiousness in their project management.
Yeah, it is very hit and miss. I have found that quite often they are prepared to talk to the studio staff and go, I want this. How would you do it? And pull on our expertise knowledge.
Yeah, that's a smart move, isn't it?
That's the smart move. Occasionally you get one that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work so well. But if it's a lot of industry is about accepting that sometimes it's not your skill set and asking the person whose it is and going, how do I make this do this?
Yeah, I've been doing that with air conditioning lately. Similar. In different contexts, but yeah, you got to know when to ask the dumb questions, haven't you?
Sometimes you just have to know that this is not my field and ask the professional.